great, great number from Spring Awakening. That was the song that made you realize when we were watching that show for the first time on Broadway. That was when you suddenly said, oh, this is going to be special. This is not just going to be, somebody took a Frank Vegakin play and they had some young kids and rock music and okay. And then, boom, The Bitch of Living came on, and the way it was choreographed and just the energy and the great melody and the way that was put out there, and of course, those memorable lyrics all came together in a wonderful way in that show. Now, the person who gave us those lyrics and also the book for Spring Awakening and all the songs in there is with us on the telephone as we speak. His name is Stephen Sater, and he has not been just resting on his laurels, not by any stretch of the imagination. He's got a bunch of different projects that are coming to fruition this year. So it's great to have on the phone with us Stephen Sater. Stephen, are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, you sound great.
Thank you, I'm here.
Terrific.
In Bedford, New York, but I'm here.
In Bedford, you said you're staying in Bedford at like a mansion or something?
No, Bedford. It's a little town. That's a producer who's involved in one of my shows lives up here, and it's a benefit luncheon for a place called New York Stage and Film, which is a great, great theater, which has helped develop four of my shows.
Oh,
so
wow.
I came up here to speak to potential donors for the theater.
Very nice.
So that's where I am on this lovely spring day.
I can imagine. Oh, is it beautiful in New York? I'm calling from Colorado. So is it gorgeous in New York right now?
It is really gorgeous. Thank you. Yeah, really beautiful.
So let's, I don't know if I want to talk about Spring Awakening first of all. Let's talk about what you're really doing right now. The projects that are involved in, one going to London and the other going to La Jolla, California. Well, let's bring Duncan Sheik into the mix. So you're working on with him on a show called The Nightingale. Tell us about that.
Excuse me, sorry, I'm sneezing. The pollen in Bedford, I'm afraid. Yes, Duncan and I are doing a new musical. When I say new, we've been working on it since 2002, so 10 years. But it's coming together amazingly.
Okay.
And we are about to begin rehearsal June 10th at the La Jolla Playhouse. La Jolla, California. It's based on the fairy tale by Hans Christian Andersen of The Nightingale, which was my son's favorite story.
Oh.
About an aged emperor and this little common gray bird of China, the emperor of China, and this gray bird who touches his heart, and to me it's all about the power of the song of the human heart.
Ooh.
And to kind of bring down the walls within us and without us. So it's quite a beautiful piece. Moises Kaufman, who directed many things, the Laramie Project, and I Am My Own Wife. He's opening The Heiress on Broadway with Jessica Chastain this fall. He's our director. We're super, super excited about it. It's really going to be a great show.
Sounds...
So I'm doing that right now with Duncan.
Well, actually,
hold on. At the same time.
Yeah, wait, Steve, let me, before we move away from that, this is one of the things I wanted to talk about. You guys have been working on that show since, you said, 2002. That's 10.
Yeah.
Is that frustrating? Is it just the natural course of things, the way musicals develop these days? The fact that, you know, Rodgers and Hart used to pop two shows onto Broadway every year. Do you just tear your hair sometimes and say it takes 10 years to get something up?
It's a changed industry. It's a changed time. What we've done has always been groundbreaking in form, style, and content. And it's taken a while. And the success of Spring Awakening opened a lot of doors, but things still continue to take a while. Yes, it's been very frustrating, but it's also been very fulfilling, because at each step along the way, you're able to take dynamic steps forward in the work. So the show has gotten better. I'm one who's committed to the future, to the longevity. I want to create pieces that can last and, you know, touch audiences for many generations. So So yes, it's frustrating, but it's, as I say, it's also the work itself is gratifying to me. So
cool. Can I ask, this is also what I'd be curious about, like way back when, whether it was in 2002 or 3 or 4, when you had that first draft, when you put the end on the end of Act 2, how is it different now than what
extremely
did you
different. But I mean, I don't know how to begin to summarize it to you. But the show has changed shape dramatically. For example, in my early drafts, because I needed to create a 2-hour show and real story out of a very slender fairy tale, I created a young emperor rather than an older emperor, so that I could have a journey, so I could create a love story, so I could create political intrigues, so I could create a family around him. And then after working on the show for a number of years, and mind you, it's not like you're working on it constantly for 10 years.
Of course.
Years go by between incarnations of the show. Years go by between workshops. There can be 2-year periods when you're not doing any work on the show. But then you have an opportunity again, and you go back to work on it. And we completely revamped the show with a new director, I made it the story of the older emperor. And it was really a story about regret, and I wanted to create a musical that could be like a, kind of like a picture book. You would turn the pages, and the images would shift, and that would tell you the story. But now, in this final form, which is really found, it's the story of both. And it's an old man looking back on the young man he was, and you actually see the two stories happening simultaneously as the old emperor tries to make good on the life he lived and tries to find again the love he let go. So I think it's a theme that can resonate for a lot of people.
Cool. Because I do wonder about that. They always say that it's an old cliche, but it's so true that writing is really rewriting. And so I wanted to see the differences between that first blush of like, we've got it, we finished the first draft, we think it's good, and then going through these permutations and further discoveries and realizing, oh, it was good, but now we found the key. Mm-hmm. Now there's that extra, you know, element.
But there are many pieces of the show which remain what they first were, what they once were, and they remain that to this day.
Now, let me ask Stephen Sater about the other project that you're working on, the one that is going to England, and this one is based on another fairy tale?
No, not a fairy tale. It's based on Alice in Wonderland.
Well, fairy tales,
a children's book. But it was the world's first children's book, actually, which people... It was the first children's book that was written for a wide readership, as opposed to being something only for, a slim story for very young adults.
Like a primer book, yeah.
So it's a kind of a radical book, Alice in Wonderland. But in any event, it's we received a commission from the National Theatre of London, the Royal National Theatre, to create a piece for young performers. And the show, which is called Alice by Heart, has opened already at over 30 different theatres across England.
Oh.
And in 30 separate productions, mind you, most of which I have not seen. And then one production will be selected and will be brought into the National Theater beginning in late June. So I will have to fly from San Diego to London and then back again. I'll have one show opening in the midst of rehearsal of another, which is exciting and fun and tiring at the same time.
You know, it's what everybody dreams of. It's like, oh, I'm dealing with a show here, but I've got another one opening over there. I mean, that's what it's all about. If you reach that point, you know.
Yeah.
Now,
did you see
the Frank Wildhorn Wonderland Broadway musical?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not. No, I live in California, and I was not around. But I think I probably would not have gone anyway, just because I had my own Alice show going on. I probably would have avoided it. But I don't know. I didn't have the opportunity. It didn't last very long. I had a very good friend who designed the costumes for it, Susan Hilferty, who did the costumes for Spring Awakening, who actually is also doing the costumes for The Nightingale. But I was unable to see the show.
Okay. Cool. And so but I think this is what it's all about again, is that you've got the one show happening, the other show happening, and I'll bet you're working on other musicals as we speak?
Oh, I am indeed, yeah. Yeah,
such
I have
as?
A new show that I'm writing with Bert Bacharach called Some Lovers, and it's the first new piece for the theater Bert has done in 48 years.
Since Promises.
Promises.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and it's thrilling. I've been writing songs with Bert Bacharach for 4 years, and they're so beautiful that I can't even tell you how beautiful they are.
Well, let me
so that's been a lifetime joy.
Yeah, I can imagine. How did you hook up with Bert Bacharach?
He was my favorite composer, and I was signing a music publishing contract, which is to say, with companies who will represent my interests as a songwriter, and had meeting after meeting in these various companies, and they would say, "Who, if you could meet any composer, who would you want to meet?" And I think I was expected to name again and again, you know, the top young pop writers who were writing for the winners of American Idol. Mm-hmm. And I just kept saying Bert Bacharach. And finally someone said, "Oh, we've got a guy here who's been working with Bert for 35 years. And a week later, Bert called me.
Wow.
And he knew about Spring Awakening, and we met. And he said, "You know, if you ever have a lyric," we had this great, wonderful meeting, and we got up to leave. And I said, he said, "You know, if you ever have a lyric sometime that you..." And I said, "I brought one." And he got up, and I was leaving, and he started looking at it and glancing. And the next thing I knew, he was sitting down again, and he started reading the lyric out loud. And he said, "Oh, my God, Stephen, oh, my God, this is so real. So real, man. Who hasn't felt this, man?" And then he left the next day for Australia. He was conducting his first symphony. And I thought, "Oh, that was amazing. That was my meeting with Bert Bacharach." And I didn't think about it, and 3 months later, he came back from Australia and called me, and he said, "I have something for that lyric if you want to hear it." And I went to his house, and we sat down at the piano, and he began playing this song. He said verbatim what I wrote with no changes, and it was a moment of my lifetime. This song is so, so, so beautiful. And so things evolved from there.
Is that song in the show that you're working on, or was it just a stand-up?
It is. Yes.
It is.
It is. And it's one of the emotional high points of the show, in fact, yeah.
Now, but, okay, you go from that first meeting and the excitement of that, and then, oh, my God, he put his music to my... Then trying to actually work with him on a musical project. Are you able to have your own voice and say, "No, I don't..." Or do you always have to think, "Oh, my, no, it's Bert Bacharach, whatever he says is right"?
Oh, no, no, it's not that way at all.
Okay.
No, no, if anything, I'm in the driver's seat. Because I write the book and the lyrics, and so I kind of shape the show a lot. And the way we write, I write the lyrics first, and then Bert sets them to music. So, no, we have a great, wonderful partnership. It's tremendous. Tremendous. I can't say enough great things about Bert. He just had his birthday, and he just was honored at the White House with the Gershwin Award this past week.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing else to say about it. He's Bert Bacharach. I mean,
yeah.
And then at the same time, while working, it's kind of like an Elvis Costello thing, where he'll work with Bert Bacharach, and then he'll work with, you know, people so far afield from all different types of music. You've also worked with Serge Tankian of System of a Down.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. He's phenomenal.
Well, how did that?
Phenomenal.
What did you work with him on?
What did I work with him? What did you say?
Yeah, what did you work with him on? I mean, how did that come about?
I have a show called Prometheus Bound,
which
is based on the ancient Greek tragedy of Prometheus. And I thought, you know, Serge, their whole band, System of a Down, was second-generation Armenian genocide survivors. And I felt like I could feel that wail of pain and displacement in their music. And I thought that really fit. You know, Prometheus is the god who sinned by giving fire to humankind. He was the great humanitarian. He gave, you know, in the Greek legend, he gave us mind, he gave us home, he gave us warmth, he gave us the ability to cook food. So and for that, he's punished. He's bound in chains and tied to a rock at the end of, you know, civilization, the end of the world. I thought, well, he's like the first prisoner of conscience. And it just struck me that Serge would be a great fit for that. So I brought this wailing electronic rock music to this ancient Greek tragedy. Diane Paulus, who's directed Hair, directed Porgy and Bess on Broadway this year.
Mm-hmm.
Is nominated for 10 Tony Awards right now. She directed it. I think we're going to do it, a concert version of it, next year in New York. So that's a very exciting piece too.
Certainly is. My goodness, and it sounds exciting. I will say that it's funny that maybe one of the themes of this particular episode of Dave's Gone By seems to be musicians overcoming pain through music. Like an hour ago, we were talking with Jamie Stewart of the band Shoo Shoo, and you know he had all sorts of personal issues growing up, and then his father committed suicide, and then he's using his music sometimes to battle through depression. You did not have the most wonderful time growing up either. I mean, you had a terrible sort of tragic event that you had to get over.
Yeah, I did.
I mean,
that's certainly true.
How old were you when the fire happened?
I was 19, yeah.
Oh, so you were already... Were you a happy-go-lucky guy at that point, and then everything changed? Or were you already... what were you like as a kid, and then what was that event like?
Let me give you a brief answer, because I don't have so much more time. Okay. I'm in... But they're beckoning me. I have to leave Bedford soon and go back down to the city.
Oh, okay.
But I was a bright guy, yeah, and it definitely changed me forever. But I was also an actor. I acted in a lot of shows, and I had written a manuscript, and it burnt up, and I lost it in the fire. I lost everything in the fire. I was on fire, as I guess you know. I had to jump off a third-story balcony to get out, and I shattered and fractured like 14 vertebrae and broke my arms and wrists, and I was really determined to create things that could last, that I wanted to create works that could become a permanent part of the world. So it really informed who I am in a big way. Yeah, I did become much more studious and much more serious for a long time. But ultimately great, I think.
Well, and plus, I mean, you've not only gotten over it and had a big famous Broadway musical, you're married, we have a kid. So, things definitely turned around from there. Since I only have you for another, couple of minutes, I want to get to Spring Awakening, of course. And I'm wondering about that moment when everything popped for you and with Duncan Sheik, of knowing, aha, it's going to feel and sound like this, and the kids are going to grab the microphones on stage and sing like rock stars. Do you remember that moment of figuring out how it was really going to feel?
I remember it vividly, and it was in 1999. So it took 7 years to get there. But Spring Awakening was my idea. When I met Duncan and we had begun writing songs together, and I said to him, we should create a piece of theater together. And he said, musical theater, and he made a face. And he said to me, the problem with musical theater is the music's only relevant to other pieces of musical theater. And I said, you mean you want to create something that's relevant to the culture at large? And he said, yeah. And he said, people our age, people, young people, he said. And the moment he said it, I just remembered this play, this 19th century German play, Spring Awakening, which is all about the yearning and angst and longing of being a young person. And I thought, for generations, that place has been filled in our culture by rock music, by pop music. So it seemed a great marriage to me to bring this rock sound to this beautiful, German expressionist play. And we set about completely adapting the play. I think many people think we took that play and added songs to it. Nothing could be further from the truth. That's really my book. It's really our script. We really created a new story in the guise of that play. But in the development of that, so some months into it, when I called Michael Mayer, my friend, a director, to come on board to direct it, it was Michael who had the idea that the kids would pull microphones out, and that would be how we would transition from the past into the present. I mean, it was a brilliant theatrical idea that works. It works really brilliantly in the theater.
And it was also superbly choreographed. I mean, just the whole feel of the show was pretty tremendous. I'll never forget it. I don't think anybody who saw that and saw them whip those mics out at the Bitch of Living would just be like, oh, wow. We're in another realm now. That's just amazing. And the show,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think we would have Glee without that show, for better or worse, but that whole
I'm sure we wouldn't.
Explosion is pretty great. And what do you think the great legacy of Spring Awakening will be?
Well, I think for me, I think, you know, for me, that's there. You know, there are ways to examine that question. I think that the most potent legacy it will leave is itself. Is I think the show will help. Will you know? I think the show has opened the doors for a very different kind of music and a very different kind of musical on Broadway.
Hmm.
I mean, there's no doubt that shows that Once, for example, which is, you know, nominated for 11 Tonys this year, which just would not have been done as a Broadway show because Spring Awakening came before it. But I think that, you know, Spring Awakening has been, is because it's characterized as a rock musical, people talk about it when they talk about Hair and when they talk about Rent, and it's not how I see Spring Awakening. I see Spring Awakening much more in the tradition of musicals like Carousel and West Side Story, great, haunted romances. And I think the fact that the music is rock, that the idiom is rock, will kind of become incidental over time. And people will realize what we created is a kind of classic piece of musical theater. So that's what that would be my greatest hope.
Wow. Wow. We've been talking with Stephen Sader, who is, of course, the lyricist and the book writer for Spring Awakening, and then, of course, all these other projects, Nightingale and La Jolla, and then he's doing Alice in London. Do you have another minute or two, or do you have to run?
I have to run soon. I know that you wanted to talk about the book, which has come out.
Oh, sure, yes.
About the lyrics of Spring Awakening.
It's called A Purple Summer. It's available from Hal Leonard Books. And it's the lyrics, but it's also more. Why don't you tell everybody?
Oh, no, it's not just a publication of the lyrics.
Right.
It's what happened was that when we were opening the show in London, the show, Spring Awakening, has opened in 38 countries around the world. And but at the time, there was a kind of explosion of productions. One was happening just then in Vienna, and I was very involved in that because of, I know German, and there was a Korean and a Philippine and a Japanese production all happening at once. And I was writing emails because I was very involved in the translation into those languages. Mm-hmm. And overseeing the translation. And I was writing emails to the different translators trying to explain the lyrics, which are famously, you know, poetic. And to the translators, I often felt they were too sentimental, or they took the wrong take, or they were too accusatory. And so I began writing these emails, and Michael Mayer, my director, read some of them, and he said, and he and our musical director for all those years, Kim Grigsby, so stopped me in London and said, you know, you must write a book. You have to. He said, you know, we won't be here forever. We won't be part of these productions. There'll be high schools all over the country doing the show and colleges. You need to write a book explicating the lyrics for the general public, for the fans of the show, and also for the performers who will be doing it. And so I finally made time to do that. And so that's this book, A Purple Summer. It's the sort of notes on the lyrics.
Did you discover anything?
I think they expand on the literature within the literature. I think they expand on what's in the heart of the show. They expand on the themes of the show. I don't know. I've had a lot of really strong response from people who have, you know, read them or heard them, you know, who've been in touch with me, strangers, about, you know, how much that book has meant to them. So I'm glad I finally made time and did it.
And did you have any major revelations for yourself or discoveries? Like, in the writing process, did you go like, oh, aha, like, this is what I meant because it was subconscious, and now you're consciously bringing it to the fore?
I'm pretty conscious of what I'm doing.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I when there are literary allusions or double meanings or thematic points being hit, I usually become pretty conscious of it at some point. So, no, it was revelatory, the writing of it, and it was cathartic in some way. But it wasn't like I surprised myself. I wouldn't say that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, everybody can get A Purple Summer from Hal Leonard Books and also follow the projects of Stephen Sader. And I have to ask, also in your bio, and you know, I go to Wiki like everybody else, but you've done a draft of a screenplay for a remake of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do? I mean, do you not watch the old Dick Van Dyke movie?
Oh, I absolutely watched it, yeah. But I'm completely reinventing it. completely reinventing it. But I'm holding to the heart of the story again and what the story is about. But I'm writing a story for today. I'm not writing a story for the 1960s. So, it's still set in the same time period. It still has the same characters, but I have to bring myself to it, or, you know, why else am I doing it?
And are the songs going to be the old songs, or new, or a mix, or what?
I think there's a mix.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, yeah. You know, it's sort of a classic movie, so you wonder why they would want to remake it, but then again, they remake everything.
Yeah.
And again, if there's something new that you can bring to it, I guess that kind of makes things interesting as well. And I guess the last question for Steven Sager would be, because you are a pretty spiritual person, I'm wondering, what level does religion play in your life and your work?
Well, I'm a Buddhist, and I would talk about Buddhism as a practice, and rather than merely a belief system. Buddhism is really about changing the world one life at a time, and that begins with yourself. And really, it's a process of inner revolution, mm-hmm. of finding, I'm part of the Soka Gakkai, which is a value-creating organization around the world. It's like a grassroots world peace movement. But it's also a way of awakening your own heart and finding the path to the fulfillment of your own dreams. Mm. It's not about worshiping some Buddha outside yourself. It's about Buddha means awakened one. It's about awakening yourself. It's about manifesting Buddhahood. It's about pulling out what's always been within you. And so in that respect, I would say it plays a great importance in my work, so much so that I can't imagine my work without it, because it's this great, my practice is such a great tool for exploring my own heart and bringing forth what's in my
heart. Wow. Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, and you do it wonderfully.
And it's given me a mission to, try and affect change in the world. Try and touch my determination with Spring Awakening was to touch the troubled heart of young people around the world, and I can't believe how true that has come. So.
Well, let's go out with another song from Spring Awakening. I love the fact that this is college radio and we can actually play this song. It's another song that everybody just sat there in the theater going, wow, I can't believe this is just amazing. I think you know what song it is. I won't even say the title, but I will thank Steven Sager so much for taking the time, calling from Bedford, New York. I want to wish you best of luck, of course, on Sales of a Purple Summer from Hal Leonard Books.
Thank you.
Also, the shows that you're going to be working on, Prometheus Bound, Nightingale, the show in London about Alice in Wonderland, all of it, and all the other projects you're working on. Really, a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much, man.
Well, thank you so much, Dave. I really appreciate it.
You too. Have a great weekend.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.